Well, good morning again. Today we are moving forward in our Plot Twist sermon series. We've got one more week left after this, and we've been looking at these amazing stories of God's people and how God was present even when things didn't seem to be going the right direction. We looked at Jacob and how different detours in his life led him to develop a faith and a trust in God and to recognize that God was with him each step of the way. We looked at his son Joseph and how even when things did not seem as though God was at work, God was definitely at work behind the scenes, orchestrating things to use Joseph for a greater purpose. We looked last week at Moses and how he felt like maybe he was at the finish line, as though he wasn't of use to God, and maybe he was disqualified or unqualified, but God used him anyways. And then this week, we're going to look at David, which is a story about a destiny that was delayed. Now, we all know what destinies delayed look like. And, you know, on a lighthearted note, I want to just go ahead and address the elephant in the room. This has been a topic of conversation the past few days at the church office. It's been a topic of conversation as I've run into people this morning. Yes, I got a haircut. And when everyone is noticing your haircut, it means one of two things. It means either you waited way too long to get it cut, or it means they cut it way too short. Or in my situation, both. So that's what happened. The way that it's supposed to work is it's supposed to go 2, 3, 6, cut on top. And it went 2, 3, and then cut on top. And once they started cutting on top, I was just like, just take it all off. It's okay. And so my hair has a destiny that is delayed to be the right length. It will be here in a few weeks. As someone said to me as we were walking out of the 9 o'clock service, they said, every barber will tell you that the difference between a good haircut and a bad haircut is about 2 weeks. So in 2 weeks, we'll be back to normal and we'll be in the right place, but the destiny has been delayed. We know what it's like for destinies to be delayed. We know what it's like to experience delays in all matters of life. And actually, you know, there's something that actually was fulfilled that I would love to share with you, something that I discovered the other day. I was sitting in my office and they had come in, Jonathan Burns and his wonderful crew had come in and they'd worked on the windows in my office and then they stained them and I get high every time I'm in my office, but they look amazing. But here's the incredible thing about that. I was sitting there looking at the windows and I thought to myself, we are in the year 2026. In 2019, we started a capital campaign. We hit the delay of a global pandemic. We hit the delay of changing the church name. We hit the delay of, you know, just matters of construction. We hit the delay of having to fundraise. We hit the delay known as the Historic Preservation Commission. And we hit delays along the way, but I was sitting there looking at it, I was like, I think that's the last thing we have to do. I think my windows were it. And it was pretty awesome to get to that finish line. And, you know, Terry Hunt, King Smith, Jonathan Burns, Kyle McQuitty, Trey Odom, a lot of people within the life of our church were influential and a part of that. We got new sidewalks. We got new windows. We have a beautiful restored sanctuary. And it took a few years. There were some delays and some roadblocks along the way, but by golly, we've gotten here. And then the next day, the painters showed back up and they had more work to do. But anyways, I think we're about done. I think we're at the right point and we're where we need to be. And it's just been incredible to just watch that journey and to get to that point. But we all know what it's like to have those frustrating moments where it feels as though our destiny is put on pause. We're trying to get somewhere and we can't seem to get to where we're going. This past summer, my friend Wesley was here from Brazil. And I've gone and visited with Wesley a couple of times in Brazil. I met him in Sao Paulo in 2006. And then I went back the next year to visit with him at his home. He was living in a place called Alimpareba at the time, and it's this beautiful little community a couple hours outside of Rio de Janeiro, if I could say that word correctly. And I went and visited with him. Me and a friend of mine had a wonderful stay with him. Everything went just about as perfect as it could go the time that we were there with him. But then we had to get home. And you know, no matter how good your experience is when you're traveling, when you start the journey home, you want to get home. There's no delays you want to encounter, but as you might expect, that long of a trip, when everything's gone smoothly, you're gonna encounter delays on the way back. So we had to fly on a connecting flight from Sao Paulo to Chicago, and then we would fly back to Atlanta. And so we're getting ready to fly back, and we're in Sao Paulo, and we're at the airport, and there's a delay. And before we even got ready to take off, we had looked at our itinerary and we had thought to ourselves, I really don't know that they're giving us enough time in Chicago. I think that we maybe they should have given us a little bit more time between our flights, but they do this more than we do. Surely they know what they're doing. And so we got ready and we're getting ready to fly. And so we're going. But right before our flight is supposed to board in Sao Paulo, they come over the intercom and said, the flight crew has been delayed in traffic. And so your flight has been delayed. And so we're like, okay, great. So we kind of wait for a minute. They end up coming in, and then they give that announcement over the intercom. I don't know if you've ever had this happen before, but it always makes me scratch my head. They said, we've had some delays in taking off, but don't worry. We plan to make that time up in the air. To which I just like, I want to get home. Why weren't you planning to go the fastest speed available anyways? And is it safe for you to go this fast? Anyway, so we're kind of going through all that thought process. We end up getting there in enough time to, you know, make it through customs and everything. But Chicago, I don't know if they still do this, but at the time, they did something that was a little inconvenient. I've gone through travel where you have to go through customs, and then you go through like a security checkpoint to get onto your connecting flight. That's pretty customary. But in Chicago, what they decided was they were going to drop you off at the front door. So you went through customs, and then they put you on a shuttle, and then they dropped you off at the front door. This was on a weekend. I think it was either a Saturday or a Sunday morning. And so incredibly busy at the airport. And this is what security looked like. This is not actually a picture from that day, but that's there we go. This is what security looked like. That was the line. Just wall-to-wall people. And we're sitting there going, we've got like 30 minutes to make our flight, maybe. I don't think we're getting through the security line. So we're kind of looking at it a little strange and kind of trying to figure out what to do. And so I did what any responsible young American would do in an airport with international security. I just started yelling and screaming, which, you know, I mean, you can criticize it, but people will pay attention to you if you start screaming in the airport. And so they did. And so somebody comes over and they end up helping us. And we ended up negotiating our way to the front of the line. And so we get up to the front of the line and we're there. And at this point, it's like 15 minutes until the gate closes. And we're like, we don't know that we're going to make this flight. We don't know that we're going to get through the security check. And then as we're standing there, you look back on these experiences and they're like these comical moments that you remember. And it just kind of makes you laugh in the midst of your stress and all of your frustrations. I was wearing a Boston Red Sox hat, and Boston had just signed a Japanese pitcher by the name of Daisuke Matsuzaka. Daisuke was his nickname. And there happened to be a Japanese family there in line right behind us. We had kind of been escorted to break in front of the line, and the guy just kind of taps me on the shoulder, and he's really excited, and he says, do you know Matsuzaka? And I was sitting there thinking to myself, dude, I bought this hat from the team store for like 20 bucks. I don't know players on the team, but I just kind of went with it. I said, I know Matsuzaka. And we just had like this nice, excited moment, and we're stressing. Then I like turned to the security people. I was like, you got to get me through this gate. I got to get to my gate. And so we ended up kind of negotiating our way. We get to the gate, and I kid you not, they are in the process of changing the destination on the marquee to where that gate is going. But as they're pulling out the doorstop of the door, we were able to walk right through the door and to get onto our flight. And we were completely exhausted, completely overwhelmed. But it was one of those moments where it was like, ah, we shall reach our destination, even in the midst of all the obstacles that we have encountered. And sometimes we experience that. Sometimes we experience that relief of just barely getting through. But then there are other times that we experience delays. There are moments where we feel like we have a destination. Maybe we even have a destiny or a purpose. And we find ourselves waiting, sometimes even years, to experience it. It might be a business plan that you're hoping would develop, and it, you know, as much as you work for it, as much as you try to hit all the markers, you find yourself waiting and waiting and waiting, unsure if it will actually come to pass. It might be a move that you're planning to make, but you just find yourself just hit with delay after delay, roadblock after roadblock. It might be something relationally that you're working on. It might be something, a goal for your family. But whatever it is, we find ourselves sometimes frustrated by these roadblocks that we encounter that seem to delay our destiny. And for a lot of us, we find ourselves looking ahead to our lives, and we have goals of where we want to be. And it just seems like every time we start to move in that direction, we just encounter another roadblock, and we're just set back, and we're delayed, and our destiny is put on hold. For others of us, you might be sitting there thinking to yourself, well, this doesn't apply to me. I'm kind of at the end of my journey, end of my career. I'm not really thinking about that. You might be looking at it more from the perspective of who are those coming behind you that have a destiny that you could help along the way. Regardless of where you are in that journey, we all know what that looks like. We all know what that experience looks like. And the question for us, this is what's so important, is how do we handle those plot twists, even the ones that seem to unjustly delay our destiny? Because here's the reality of what we see over and over again in Scripture, and we've already seen it in some of the stories we've looked at this month, is that God can use those delays for incredible purposes. God can use the roadblocks and the detours for incredible purposes. And those experiences along the way, the experience of waiting, can become a crucible for shaping us into who God wants us to be, even if it is painful and sometimes unjust along the way. So how do we handle those plot twists that seem to delay our destiny? The story of David is a fascinating one. I love the story of David, and we could go for days on David. We could do a whole sermon series just on David, because we're going to kind of do a brief overview of kind of the first half of his life. But there's a whole other side of when he becomes king that we're not even going to get to today, and so many lessons we can learn from David. But David has a fascinating story in that he is anointed king over Israel. In chapter 16 of 1 Samuel, he's anointed by the prophet Samuel, but there's a problem with that. There's a guy by the name of Saul who is currently the king. And so Saul had become the first king of Israel. They unite the kingdom. All the tribes are united together. Those who had gone through the conquest of the promised land, they had been overseen by this group of people called the judges. And it didn't really go well. So the people of Israel cried out to God, and they said, just please give us a king. Let us be like a normal nation. And so God gives them a king. And Saul is good at first. He's a good military leader. Everything's going well, but he ends up becoming corrupt. He ends up having evil in his heart. He ends up being tormented by evil spirits, and he has essentially gone mad. He has gone off the rails, and things are not going good with Saul's leadership. And so God sees this. He sees that Saul has gone astray, and God says, I'm going to step in, and I'm going to anoint a righteous person, one who is after my own heart, is the way that he describes David. Now, David was just a shepherd boy at this time, the youngest in his family, from a small town called Bethlehem, which you'll hear more about later in the biblical story. But there in Bethlehem, Samuel identifies David as who God has called to be the king over Israel. And so he's anointed king, but there's still a king on the throne, which automatically means that his destiny is going to be delayed as long as that king is alive. So David is anointed king, and then the story just gets kind of interesting, really bizarre right away, because Saul, who is still the king, is being tormented by this evil spirit, and so he talks to the people in his inner court. He's like, hey, is there anything that we can do? And they said, hey, there's this guy by the name of David who plays the harp really well. Why don't we bring him in whenever the spirit is tormenting you? He can play the harp, and that will calm you down and get you to a place of peace. So David comes in to Saul's inner court and starts playing the harp for him every time that he feels kind of led astray. Well, then in chapter 17, we have this incredible story. It's one that you probably have heard of, even if you didn't grow up in church. It's one just kind of a common thing that we talk about of kind of the small against the mighty. David versus Goliath. There's this incredible warrior king for the Philistines named Goliath. He's a giant, and David ends up as a small shepherd boy going up against the giant, ends up killing the giant. He becomes this folk legend. Everybody is just in awe of David, but Saul is still the king. Saul is still on the throne. Well, when we get to chapter 18, what we read just a few minutes ago, Saul is starting to get jealous. Saul is getting jealous because he's seeing how popular David is becoming. And then he starts to realize that there might be a little bit of an unraveling of his reign and his kingdom because of how much God seems to be blessing David. And so we pick up after they've come back from battle, and there's all these celebrations declaring praise for David and how incredible he is. And it says in chapter 18, verse 8, Saul was very angry. This refrain displeased him greatly. They have credited David with tens of thousands, he thought, but me with only thousands? And here's the key question that Saul wrestles with in his heart. What more can he get but the kingdom? What more can he get but the kingdom? Saul realizes, he becomes jealous, and he realizes that David has the upper hand. That David is who the people want, and he starts getting really self-conscious about it. So he starts keeping a close eye on David. And then we're told in verse 10, the next day an evil spirit from God came forcefully on Saul. He was prophesying in his house while David was playing the lyre as he usually did. Saul had a spear in his hand and he hurled it, saying to himself, I'll pin David to the wall. But David eluded him twice. Here's the reality when we encounter these kind of roadblocks in our lives. And sometimes these roadblocks come in the form of people bringing adversity against us. We have to learn how to dodge. David dodges the spears being thrown his way. And in dodging the spears, he evades the challenge for this moment. And all along the way, at each of these steps, God is working on David. God is molding David. God is shaping David into who David needs to be a leader. Is it just? No, it's absolutely just. Does he deserve to have a spear thrown at him? Absolutely not. But he moves out of the way. He learns how to dodge the spears that are being thrown at him. And it ends up protecting him and enabling him to keep growing and to keep being shaped and molded into who God wants him to be. Sometimes we have to dodge. Now, when we think about dodging, most of us are not having spears thrown at us, hopefully, or any other projectile object. But there are other experiences that we have. It might be words that are thrown our way, verbal insults that are thrown our direction, slander, criticism, things that would bring us down. You know, I have to scratch my head. There are all these influencers and leadership gurus that I come across, and they have like this refrain of, you just need to cut out negative people from your life. You just need to, you know, make sure you have only positive thoughts and make sure all the people around you are positive. And I just scratch my head and say to myself, these people would never make it in the church. I love you guys. I really do. But I mean, it is a part of the human experience that if we live long enough, if we're around other people, there are going to be criticisms. There are going to be insults. There's going to be verbal adversity that we are going to encounter. And what we have to learn in the midst of it is not to immediately retaliate and fight back, but to instead learn how to dodge and to learn what God might be teaching us in the process. I love the way a friend of mine, a mentor of mine, explains it. He says that when it comes to dodging things that would be brought against us, you think about it like a wad of mud. So you think about a wad of mud as, you know, rolled up into a tight ball. He says, if you take a wad of mud and you throw it at me and it hits me in the chest, one of two things can happen. I can let it bounce off and it leaves a little bit of a mark there, or I can pick it up and throw it back at you. But if I do, I'm going to be scrubbing mud off of my hand for the rest of the day. It's going to get in my fingernails, it's going to get in my skin, and I won't be able to get away from that mark. And what we have to learn to do in a lot of situations when it deals with people coming against us with their negativity, with their insults, with the things that they might bring against us, is we have to learn just simply to dodge, let it bounce off of us. Maybe you don't want to let a spear bounce off of you, but the things that can bounce off of you, the things that you can dodge out of the way, you move out of the way of them and recognize that God might be teaching you something in that. So David learns to trust God in the midst of it, and he learns to dodge the things that might come against him. That image of the king sitting on the throne and someone who's destined for that role, it resonates a little bit with me when I think back on my journey and moments where I wasn't quite ready for the next step, but I wanted to be at the next step. I think back to when I was serving as an associate pastor. The last senior pastor that I worked with, he and I got into a little bit of a conflict, and we worked through it, so it's okay to talk about it all these years later, but it became kind of tense between us, and what we realized was not that I was bad at my job and he was bad at his job. It wasn't that he was a bad boss and I was a bad employee. It was that I was ready to take the next step and ready to move forward in my leadership, but the time hadn't quite come yet. And so we had to learn to kind of dodge those conflicts, to dodge those experiences, and to let that be a season of shaping and molding so that when I was ready to lead, when it was the right time, that I was prepared and ready to be sent out to be a part of that. And God can use those seasons, and He can use it to just change our posture and to put us in a place where we're ready to receive and we're ready to for whatever God might have for us next. In David's story, the story gets really even more interesting after this, because Saul, who missed David with the spear, wasn't able to pin him to the wall, decides he's going to try other tactics to get rid of David. And so he decides, you know, I've got daughters. What if I gave the promise of my daughter in marriage to David? Then David's going to say to himself, well, I don't have the money to pay the bridal price, which was customary back in that day. I'm from humble background. And so Saul had a plan of, I'll just send him out into battle. I'll send him to the front lines and he'll end up dying there and I'll be rid of David. And so he tries to pawn off one daughter on David. David refuses. And then there's another daughter that comes along that is actually in love with David. And so it ends up working out. David is up for the challenge. And so Saul sends him out to take down 100 Philistines, thinking surely this will be a way to end David. Instead, David goes and kills 200 and is completely up for the challenge and ends up winding up being Saul's son-in-law as he marries his daughter. Well, this daughter is kind of protective of David, just like Saul's son Jonathan is protective of David. And when Michal is the daughter's name, when she realizes that Saul is coming for David, she devises a plan in chapter 19. So Saul sent men to David's house to watch it and to kill him in the morning, but Michal, David's wife, warned him, if you don't run for your life tonight, tomorrow you'll be killed. So Michal let David down through a window and he fled and escaped. Then Michal took an idol and laid it on the bed, covering it with a garment and putting some goat's hair on the head. Maybe I should try that. When Saul sent the men to capture David, Michal said, he is ill. So here, Saul's own daughter is protecting David and sending him out on this flee mission. So David, sometimes in our challenges when we encounter these detours, these roadblocks, sometimes we just have to remove ourselves from the situation. Sometimes we have to flee. Sometimes we have to exit the premises. Now, in some cases, you can't actually do that. Sometimes you're kind of locked in and you're not able to. But there are some times when it's just healthiest to remove yourself from the situation for a season. So David goes on the run and he's out and he's trying to escape and he spends years on the run. Now remember, he's got a destiny. He knows his destiny. He knows he has been anointed and chosen by God to be king over Israel. But at the moment, there's a king on the throne named Saul. He's a little crazy. He's coming for David's life. And so David just keeps on running. A lot of times what happens, though, in those seasons can be really beneficial. Sometimes it's not necessarily unjust means coming against us. Maybe it's not an evil person coming against us. Sometimes there's just adversity that we encounter in our path. And that adversity might send us in a different direction than we were planning on. It might send us into a different place than we were hoping to be. But God can use even that. I was reading recently in a book by John Maxwell, and he talked about being at dinner one night with Truett Cathy, who was the founder of Chick-fil-A, along with his brother. And the story goes that Truett Cathy had encountered adversity in his life. His brother had been killed in a plane crash. They had a property, one of their very first properties, I think it was the second one, had burned down without very little insurance coverage. And then as he's trying to rebuild the business, as he's trying to keep going, he's working hard, doesn't want to slow down at all. He's just trying to build and build and build and build. He winds up having to go in for surgery unexpectedly. And then that leads to another surgery. And he winds up for several weeks being unable to work. And he was such a hard worker that was completely disorienting for him and a season that he really struggled with through that adversity. But what ended up happening was removed from the day-to-day grind of being in the restaurant every single day, all day long, he ended up having time to think. He had time to dream. And they had been experimenting with this idea of, you know, different chicken dishes they could try with chicken breasts in their restaurant. And he had this idea one day of, what if we took that chicken breast, fried it the way my mom used to fry it, put the right toppings on it, and put it between two pieces of bread? And there, in the midst of his suffering and his adversity, of fleeing from a situation, not being where he wanted to be, not living into the destiny that he wanted, he ended up coming up with an idea that birthed his brand and ended up changing the fast food world for the better. And we know God uses Chick-fil-A sandwiches in a mighty way. I mean, it's incredible to think of. And his story, would have been a lot easier and smoother if he had not encountered the adversity, if he had not had to flee from the plan that he had for his life and the trajectory that he had as he was trying to build his business. But God used that season to birth an idea within him that ended up being the thing that he became most known for and used it for a greater purpose. And so David goes on the run. He flees. He's encountered adversity. But what he's learning along the way is he's learning how to be a leader. He's learning what it means to lead other people. He's gone from being a shepherd boy who knows how to be a warrior one-on-one when you're fighting beasts out in the wilderness, to now he's learning to lead other people into battle. He's learning to lead a group of people, which are the skills he's going to need to know when he becomes king over Israel, when that destiny is finally realized. There's something else that happens in David, and I think it's pretty incredible to see. David, despite knowing that Saul is crazy, despite knowing that as soon as Saul is out of the picture, he can take the throne and be king, David refuses to repay the evil of Saul with evil. He refuses, proverbially, to pick up the wad of mud and throw it back at Saul. He doesn't want the dirt and the guilt on his hand. And we see that after a couple of chances that he has to take Saul's life. They encounter Saul sleeping one day. And one of David's men, Abishai, says to him, Abishai said to David, "Today God has delivered your enemy into your hands. Now let me pin him to the ground with one thrust of the spear. I won't strike him twice." But David said to Abishai, "Don't destroy him." And this is the key thing he asked. "Who can lay a hand on the Lord's anointed and be guiltless? As surely as the Lord lives," he said, "the Lord himself will strike him, or his time will come and he will die, or he will go into battle and perish. But the Lord forbid that I should lay a hand on the Lord's anointed. Now get the spear and water jug that are near his head and let's go." He was smart enough to take Saul's weapon away from him, but he wasn't going to compromise to the point of trying to beat Saul at his own game. Why is that? Because he knew that something would happen in his heart if he repaid evil for evil. He knew that if he played the same game as Saul, that he was just going to become as mad and evil and crazy of a king as Saul. He knew that God was calling him to be a different kind of leader, that God had a different kind of destiny for him. And so David learned that sometimes we simply have to refrain. And by refraining, David got to experience more waiting, unjustly, but God did something really incredible in him throughout that season. Got a few screenshots off the Bible Gateway page, just so you can see these headings to these different psalms that David wrote. He wrote five different psalms. We're going to look at four of them, little sections of them. But he wrote five psalms during the period that he was running for his life from Saul. This one, it says, he sang to the Lord the words of this song when the Lord delivered him from the hand of all his enemies and from the hand of Saul. He said, "I love you, Lord, my strength. The Lord is my rock, my fortress, and my deliverer. My God is my rock in whom I take refuge, my shield and the horn of my salvation, my stronghold. I call to the Lord who is worthy of praise, and I have been saved from my enemies." That's Psalm 18, verses 1 through 3. All right, next one. This is Psalm 54. This one, it says, when the Ziphites had gone to Saul and said, is not David hiding among us? And this is what happened when David was on the run from Saul. He said, save me, O God, by your name. Vindicate me by your might. Hear my prayer, O God. Listen to the words of my mouth. Arrogant foes are attacking me. Ruthless people are trying to kill me. People without regard for God. Surely God is my help. The Lord is the one who sustains me. All right, Psalm 57. It says, this is when he had fled from Saul into the cave. So this is part of that flee journey. Have mercy on me, my God. Have mercy on me, for in you I take refuge. I will take refuge in the shadow of your wings until the disaster is past. I cry out to God Most High, to God who vindicates me. He sends me from heaven and saves me, rebuking those who hotly pursue me. God sends forth his love and his faithfulness. That part right there, the rebuking those who pursue me, is key. And then we get, when Saul had sent the men to watch David's house, this is Psalm 59. This is the part where his wife, Michal, sends him out the window so that he can go to safety. Deliver me from my enemies, O God. Be my fortress against those who are attacking me. Deliver me from evildoers and save me from those who are after my blood. What's happening in all these psalms? God is using the season of delay, the season of waiting, unjustly being persecuted by the king on the throne of Israel. And God is using it to build a dependency within David, a faithfulness within David, where he recognizes that all he has to do is just keep his trust in God. That trust may not have been there if David had just been thrust right onto the throne after Samuel anointed him. If he hadn't experienced the adversity, if he hadn't experienced the delay, he might not have learned what it meant to be a king that was just and righteous and lived his life in a way that honored God and honored God's people. God used those moments to nurture him and to build him into who God was calling him and destining him to be. And here's the thing that I see when I look at the story of David, is that what we should see in the story is we should watch the waiting shape the shepherd. Let me unpack that a little bit. The waiting shapes David from simply being a warrior into being a shepherd leader of the people. Not only that, the waiting shapes him to be completely dependent upon God for all of his needs, for all of his protection, and for all of his hope. As Tom Petty said, the waiting is the hardest part, but the waiting is where God often does his best work, shaping us into who he desires for us to be. Even if that destiny seems far away, even if that destiny seems as though the person in front of you in line just won't seem to retire or move on or get out of your way or stop throwing insults at you, even if your destiny seems to be filled with roadblock after roadblock after roadblock, God can use that waiting, he can use that season to shape you and mold you into who he desires for you to be so that you are ready to be who he called you to be when the time comes. And so as we close this morning, I just want to invite you just to reflect on where you are in your journey and where God might be leading you and how God might be using whatever season it is that you find yourself in right now to shape you and to mold you into who he desires for you to be.